just the day before Christmas. Mama, won't you hear me moan? I said just the day before Christmas. Mama, won't you hear me moan? If you take me back, baby, I'll get you anything you need. Have a good time, baby, give me just one more. Oh, have a good time, baby, give me just one more. I want to tell you I'm loving like you have never seen before.
Amazing, that's a Christmas song right there. Blind Lemon Jefferson.
I don't think I can understand a single word he's saying.
I actually had to do this show twice because he started singing and everything was fine level-wise, and then all of a sudden he began to wail and would have blown some eardrums out right there. So anyway, what I want for Christmas is for Blind Lemon here to calm down a little bit.
To fix his levels?
Fix his levels. That's what I want for Christmas. Want, the kittens to relax a little as well. They went nutty today. One of the little kittens had a little issue. Mm-hmm. A little eye problem, a little infection.
That's no good.
Had to take this little bugger to the doctor, got some medicine for her. And long story short, she's totally fine now. Took her medicine. She was fine like within 2 days, but we still kept the medicine regimen up for as long as they asked us to. And anyway, she's totally fine. All is well. But I took her to the vet, and they weighed this little bugger, and she's 3 pounds. This is Snorky. 3 pounds.
She looks 3 pounds.
She is a tiny little bugger. So today, Tony, Junior Horseman, and I were all in the garage doing a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and Whitney was gone, so the cats were inside on their own. And all of a sudden, I just hear big crash. I was like, what the fuck was that? So I run inside, and I don't know if it was for Christmas or when it was, but Granny got me 4 coasters, and they're made of glass. They're 4 glass squares, and they've got pictures in them. There's like pictures of me and my sister, and there's a picture of Granny, and I can't remember all the rest of them, but anyway, they were in a little stand, and they were in, we have this island in the middle of the kitchen, and they were in, they were in the, whatever you would call it, the shelves of the island, and the cat apparently jumped in the shelves and was playing around in there, and she gave the thing the coasters were in a little bit of a push, and they fell out, and they, all 4 of these glass coasters, the corners of the glass coasters hit the hardwood and 4 puncture holes.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. This is hardwood.
Yeah.
Okay? When I came inside, I was like, how can something so small create such vast damage? And, of course, the kitten is sitting there. And I've read a lot about animals. And animals are interesting in that they're all animals. You know?
You've got me there.
Every animal is an animal. But
that sounds like the worst fortune cookie of all time.
This gets more profound here. Every animal is an animal, yet people attribute different personalities and thoughts and emotions to different animals. For example, this kitten is a 3-pound baby kitten with huge eyes. So you walk in there, and you see the damage that has been done, and here's this baby kitten staring at you, looking like the sweetest thing you've ever seen, and you just can't get mad. You know what I mean? You sit there and you go, she's just a baby. She's just playing. She didn't mean to be bad. And you go and you hug her, despite the damage that she caused. Now, if, for example, this was like a 3-pound spider, you know
bad,
what I mean?
Bad times. You would not hug it.
There, the eyes would be small and there would be legion.
They'd be large, but there'd be 8 of them.
A multitude of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd find the largest thing in your house and you'd kill the fuck out of this thing. You know? You'd grab a knife and you'd just stab this spider repeatedly. And you'd just stab it and you'd cut its legs off and you'd drop books on it. And you'd make sure that there was nothing left of this thing but guts. Just not right. You know what I mean?
So your point here, I guess, is that kittens are cuter than spiders.
Yeah.
Well, I agree.
It's just not fair. But, I mean, you look at the kitten, and the kitten's got this... Well, it's got a kitten look on its face. But because it's got, like, big eyes and a cute face, you know, in your head you think, this little baby was just playing. She's really sad for what she did here. She's apologizing to me. In reality, the cat's doing no such thing.
It is funny that if you think about it, of the two animals, the cat is much more likely to be able to distinguish something resembling right and wrong.
Yeah, that's what you think.
Yeah.
But seriously now, you know, it's not like there's a dolphin in my fucking house.
Yes, or a chimpanzee or something.
I mean, I often, you know, the cats continue to do stupid things, quite frankly. And, you know, there's always a little bit of frustration, like, why don't these cats learn? You know? Like, we have a spray bottle. And so the cats will jump up. They keep jumping up on the table and the counter. They're not allowed on there. So every time they jump up there, I just spray the shit out of them. And they jump off and they run into the couch for a while. And then they come out and they're normal again. And sure as shit, like an hour later, they jump up on stuff again. And it's like, why don't you learn, cat? And then when you really think about it, you realize this is like a 3-pound baby kitten. Look at the size of its head. You know, can you imagine the size of this thing's brain?
Probably pretty small.
Why do I expect this baby kitten to have the brain capacity of a human being? And quite frankly, I'm out on the road every day, especially during the holiday season, and people are really dumb.
Oh yeah.
So I'm expecting a lot from this cat. So anyway, I'm doing the best I can here with these kittens, but the other night I they were being really wacky, and so I got the iPhone, and I actually filmed them for a half hour as they were being crazy. And they were running all over the place and jumping and leaping and doing what kittens do. And they end up over by the front door, and we've got a fake plant there. And they like to jump in it. And they're not allowed, obviously, to jump into the fake plant, so they always get sprayed. And it was like these cats, one of them would jump in it, and I'd spray the shit out of it, and it would run away, and then it would start lurking towards the plant again. And I'm filming this, and it's just like, you're not going to do this, cat. I mean, you see me here. You see that I've got a spray bottle in my hand. You really cannot be this stupid, can you? And, of course, the cat jumps in the thing again, and I spray the shit out of it. It runs off and gives me that look like it can't believe I had the temerity to do this. And then a few minutes later, it's back lurking by the plant again. It's just like, wow, you know?
Maybe he's wondering when you'll learn.
If it's going to come down to a war of wills between me and the cats,
yes.
Listen, I've had a lot of people email me. I've had a lot of people post on my Facebook page, and they're like, Brian, someday you're going to learn that the cats run the house and you just live in it.
Mm-hmm.
You people don't know who I am or how I behave. It is going to be a battle of wills between me and these kittens, and I am determined to win. You know what I mean?
You are a stubborn man.
I was watching an appearance of Norm Macdonald on, I believe, the David Letterman show, and they each have kids, and Norm's kid is older than Dave's, and so Norm is explaining to Dave that his advice is, I used to play ball with my kid, basketball or whatever, and I'd always let him win. Now he's 13 or 14 and he beats me, and Norm is like, you know, I try to tell my kid, I always let you win. He doesn't believe me. So his theory is, you need to just beat these kids. You don't let them win. When you play basketball with a toddler, you beat him every single time. That's kind of the mindset that I have with these cats. You know?
You want to beat them in basketball?
I don't. Yeah, sure. If we grapple on the ground, the cats are proficient at jiu-jitsu. When we grapple on the ground, I will body triangle them and not let them go. I will make them squeal. You know what I mean? These cats, if it's going to be a battle of wills between me and the cats, then it's going to be an eternal battle until either me or the cats pass on. You know? The day will never come when I surrender this house to these cats. We're going to work together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with the cats on the couch. I'm okay when the cats run around all over the place and accidentally knock shit on the ground. But there's some rules here in this house, you know? There's some rules that these cats are going to abide by. So yeah, that's the latest on these little buggers. That's what happened with Snorky today. Popped four holes in the hardware.
She broke your floor.
Astounded that something so small could do this damage.
Your cats have already learned to use weaponry.
They have. So, and it's just like nothing else in the house would have caused this damage. You know what I mean? It just happened to be four heavy, square...
Sharp. That's the key.
I mean, seriously, what else in the house?
If Granny had gotten you circular coasters, we would not be having this conversation
nothing,
right now.
Nothing like that would have happened. But they happen to be four heavy, square glass coasters, right? I just couldn't even believe it. I suppose we got to talk about some other stuff here. I could talk about the cats
limericks?
For weeks. No more limericks. And then after she did this deed, and I forgave her because she looked so cute, she started running around the house like a complete mad cat, running and jumping. And every now and then she'll, you know, you'll walk down the hall or whatever, and she'll attack your feet. And usually you just shoo her away and she runs off and that's the extent of it. No, this cat would not leave my feet alone. For like, I had to leave the house. This cat was just repeatedly going after my feet. Tony and the horsemen were leaving and the cats are jumping up and the cat was attacking Nails' belt. And then it just randomly started to try to run up horseman's leg. And it was attacking feet and going crazy. And it was so nutty that the other cat, and they usually always play together, the other cat was just sitting there looking at this cat. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you today? So eventually I left, and then when I came back, she was asleep. So
when I got here, one of them came up to me, and they do attack feet, and I'm just used to it by now. And then I was standing there, and I looked down, and I realized she had both her front paws on my calf, and was about to assume the scratching position. And I usually am wearing jeans, and I probably would have been okay with that at this point, because they're still, you know, they have scratched me, but they're very small kittens, so it doesn't hurt. But
we clip their nails, too.
Well, that's good. That would help, too. But more importantly, usually I'm wearing jeans. Today I'm wearing sweatpants. This was not going to fly. And I almost jumped out of her grasp. And after that, I think for the entire, like, 90 minutes I've been here, they were asleep.
They're getting much better. She did try to attack my feet when they were bare today. Trouble. Mm. That was bad times right there. All right, let's talk about a little bit of wrestling here. I know that many of you listening care far more about the cats than modern-day pro wrestling, but the King of the Ring last night was great.
Yeah, that's pretty much true, actually.
It was a great Raw, and we watched an old War Games match. And granted, when you hear the lineup, you're going to think, how could this War Games be great? But in fact, it was a great War Games because they followed the formula. They did War Games the way it's supposed to be done.
When you do War Games and you follow the War Games formula, it is almost impossible to screw up.
You can take a bunch of bad wrestlers and book them properly in War Games and they'll have a great match. You have a bunch of really good wrestlers, not to pick on TNA, which I, of course, never do, but it happens all the fucking time, every year at lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
You take a bunch of good wrestlers and you fuck with the formula, and all of a sudden you've got a nonsensical, stupid match that everybody forgets a week later because it was so goddamn dumb.
Yeah.
So we're going to tell you tonight how to do War Games for... I know there's some of you out there listening that just don't get the concept of War Games because most likely you're young and you're only, I guess... frame of reference for War Games is the fucking Lethal Lockdown. So I feel for you, people. I pity you. But we're going to tell you tonight how to properly do War Games so that people give a shit. Even if Bunkhouse fucking Buck, the Nasty Boys, Dusty Rhodes, Terry Funk, and numerous other miscreants are involved in the match. That's coming up here in a little while. So, Vinny, I'm going to let you get going on Raw here. Remember, this is an entertainment program, so let's
It's an entertainment program, and it's a three-hour Raw. So we'll be zipping through it.
Would you like to tell everybody about what happened on the stairs, or should we move on?
Well, you brought it up. I guess I kind of have to.
Well, you don't have to. You could lie.
I could lie, or perhaps just move on.
I'll tell everybody what happened. So my stairs, I've got this button, and if I push it, the stairs turn into a ramp.
I so wish that was true right
now. You didn't know that, did you?
No.
Yeah.
And you know,
it scares the shit out of the cats, too.
That is something that you would do. That and a trap door.
I'll just tell everybody my perspective, and then you can tell them what happened.
All right.
It's almost exactly what happened with the kittens, just louder. I was in here getting ready for the show, and I heard... But much, much louder. I didn't want to hit it as hard as I did last time, because I thought I almost broke my
desk. You would break the desk if you were here.
But there was just a loud, just like a meteor hit our house.
Thump.
Yeah.
It was a thump.
And I was like, what the fuck happened? Vinny?
Why don't you tell... Because you went to investigate. What did you see when you opened the door?
You were sitting on the stairs.
Yeah. Yes, I came in here to do the show. I realized I'd forgotten to email myself my SmackDown Raw notes. So I went back downstairs to do that. And the cats were there. I saw the cats. And there was one cat who was on the first stair from the top over on the right. And the other cat was like three steps down over on the left-hand side. And I saw them. They were both sitting there. Neither one jumped out at me, but I wanted to make sure I didn't step on them. And I was so careful about where I was not stepping that I didn't pay attention to where I was stepping. And my foot caught some of the step, but I am also wearing some very slippery socks on carpet. And I went, as Jim Cornette would have said, ass over tea kettle. And my feet went flying out in front of me.
Did the cats leap high into the air?
I did not see them. All I saw, honestly, was your ceiling and my hands out in front of me. So I took a bump on your stairs. I'm fine. Totally fine. My first thought was, in fact, oh God, I've squished the cats. And I looked to my right. One had not moved. I looked down. One had fled.
One had not moved. Clearly Gracie. Well, I can tell you this right now. Fatter one.
You still know them better than I do. I still can't tell them apart, honestly. But one had not moved. The other had fled. She jumped from the stairs. And my first thought was, because I heard her land and thought, oh God, I knocked her off the stairs. And then I realized enough time had gone by that I must have landed, and then she jumped.
So she actually jumped off the stairs to the hardwood to blow?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't think they've ever jumped from that height.
I would think not. I don't know if she may have gone down some stairs first.
That cat must have been like somebody in the 84th floor during an earthquake, where they're so terrified they leap and hope that they land in the water.
Well, think about it from her point of view.
You weigh 93 times as much as Snorky.
Yes.
93 times.
90. About 90.
Oh, come on.
91, 92. But actually...
93.3 times.
That'd be 280?
Yeah.
About 92 times. But point being, she saw this monster go airborne out of control in her vicinity, and she got the hell out of Dodge. And, I looked around and I was fine, and I saw that the one on the stairs was fine. And
poor Snorky.
I looked down and she was sitting there on the hardwood, fine. And then you came out, and I just told you I slipped. I'm fine. Everything is fine. After telling you that, I then went down to investigate the one downstairs. She is fine.
Okay, that's good to know.
She's
never leaped from that height, but now she probably will regularly.
It's possible. It's possible she will do this daily now. But yes, she. Wasn't even really that scared, honestly. But
she was scared enough to jump from two stories.
Yeah, but 20 seconds later, she was not. She was walking around fine.
They're little. They're adorable.
Yeah, and stupid. They may have forgotten it already.
Yeah, that's also true.
So that was my night, everyone. And then I had I'm over it now. But I had an adrenaline spike that I had to kind of just
an adrenaline spike. You say?
Well, I thought I killed the cats.
I see. Thank God you did not land on Snorky.
Yeah, so I'm going to be very careful going down these stairs in the future.
That would be the equivalent. Let me do the math here. 92. That would be the equivalent of a 13,616-pound man falling on me.
and you would jump off stairs to get out of the way, wouldn't you?
I actually may leap from the second story to get away from that. My guts would spurt out if you would have landed on me.
Yeah.
Poor little kitten. All right, let's do Raw here.
All right. Raw opened.
Thanks, Vince.
Yes. Raw opened with Alex Riley coming out in the worst fitting suit I've seen in many a day. He and Punk on commentary traded barbs. Punk won. He was much funnier, talking about how a DUI was drop security, and he looked like he was going to court. First match, King of the Ring, was Alberto and Daniel Bryan. Punk, by the way, was wearing a Colt Cabana t-shirt on Monday Night Raw. That made me laugh. So, it was Daniel Bryan versus Dos Queiroz Jr. I was hoping to God the finish would be Daniel Bryan winning via high kick, just like Miracle Crow Cop, but sadly they did not make this match to appeal only to me.
Dos Queiroz Jr., where did that come from? He just decided to alert us as to his real identity.
Remember when he lost to Miracle Crow Cop?
Yeah.
Via high kick?
I see.
That's what I was referring to.
I see. Over my head.
For a second there, I thought I had totally screwed up his identity and gotten the wrong Mexican involved or something. But anyway, they had probably... I wrote they had probably the best match of the show. By the end, that is certainly not true. They had a very good match. Daniel Bryan did his usual dive into the dashboards. Punk pointed out he does this every week. And Alberto immediately threw him in and armbarred him for the win. So, this was fun.
He doesn't need to stop doing that. Oh, and by the way, everybody, before we go any further, I'd just like to note that Caitlyn did, in fact, win NXT Season 2. She beat Naomi. So, I called that from very early on.
I was
not that I like to toot my own horn or anything like that, but...
flabbergasted when I went to the website this evening, and you had the lineup for NXT Season 4.
Oh, yeah, they're doing it again.
Why?
I don't know.
Okay. Thought perhaps there was a reason.
I don't even know why they finished Season 3. I so gave up on that show when it moved to the internet. I watched it one time and that was it.
So they had highlights of prior Kings of the Ring. They included Brock Lesnar, although they had absolutely nothing to say about it. It was great because they had Triple H winning and talking about all that he went on to do, and Bret Hart and how he was the best there is, and Steve Austin, and that's where Austin 316 was phrased. And then they just said, and Brock Lesnar.
Well, we did have Lawler say, we all know what he's gone on to.
Yes.
But they didn't say what that was, of course.
That may have been later, but yes. So Truth came out for a promo. He said he was still seeing his friend. He basically vowed to take out the guys from Nexus one at a time, challenged any of them to come out and face him. McGillicuddy accepted. Now, here's what happened, everyone. McGillicuddy started to walk down the hallway. I began to fast forward. When he came back from commercial, the announcers were talking about what had happened. I realized I had missed something, and so I went back and checked.
Astounding.
This is not that hard to do, everyone. You can do something in 5 seconds, talk about it later, and make sure people know what happened. So yes, what happened was a mystery man attacked McGillicuddy. All we saw was jean shorts and purple wristbands.
And a body.
And it was John Cena, yes, and a human being wearing them. So.
Because that would have been quite a trick.
An invisible man.
If all we saw were jean shorts and wristbands.
That would be a heck of a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
John Morrison and Cody Rhodes had the second match. It was fine. Morrison won with his running knee. Drew McIntyre versus Ezekiel Jackson. This is the point in the show where match sucked, first of all. But Punk claimed there was a pad removed from the turnbuckle. None of the other announcers knew what he was talking about. I guess there's a pad that goes... that connects from the turnbuckle to the post, and that pad came missing because I couldn't tell what was happening. But anyway, this is where Punk said, I know better, I'm a wrestler. And Cole said, you're not a wrestler, you're a superstar. That made me laugh. So the match sucked, and then they had a double count out here in this King of the Ring opening round match. So that was very lame.
Technically, the turnbuckle is the metal part between the pad and the post.
Hmm.
That is the turnbuckle.
See, I suppose.
Finny, how many rings have you put together? That's the turnbuckle.
I put one ring together 100 times, but usually when they say the turnbuckle pad is off, it's the part that's in the ring facing the corner. That's the big pad.
Well, it's the pad, yeah.
Well, the pad then was still there.
Yeah, but because the turnbuckle was exposed.
Is that not normal?
Well, no, they usually actually do have a pad over the turnbuckle.
I see.
And the end of the turnbuckle, which is the main pad.
Where the turnbuckle and the two ropes all connect.
Yes.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very, very subtle spot to use. Anywho, Daniel Bryan was backstage. The Bellas tried to flirt with him. Riley came up and said something about having 50 dancing girls. He got a phone call from Miz that said they were all unneeded. Miz arrived in a horrendous suit. Black and gray plaid over a sweatshirt with the hood hanging out over the back. This looked lame. He cut a promo announcing the celebration had been canceled because he had something else that could sum up everything better, and it was the Miz Girl. That's what he called her. It was the girl from Raw last week who was shocked and angry at the whole thing. He talked about all the guys who said he would never make it, like JBL and Triple H and Cena. He said he was now the champion. Said if anyone ever tells you that you can't do anything, believe them, because you can't. Only a special man like me can. It was a great promo, and he was running wild, and finally Lawler could take no more. Interrupted him, said that some guys had never been champion because they never had a title shot. He claimed he had never gotten one, which apparently is not true. Apparently he wrestled Shawn Michaels once, someone has said.
Well, I got a million emails about this. Apparently, if you watch the video, which I did not, if you watch the video, Vince McMahon does say it was a non-title match. And the referee did, in fact, hold up the title and present it as if it was a title match. But Vince, on commentary, said that it was not a title match. Now, with that said, apparently there was a house show match that Jerry Lawler had at some point in the mid-90s, which was, in fact, a championship match. So it's all a very, very complex situation here, but there you go.
I do love that people care, honestly.
I seriously got like two dozen emails.
Yeah,
about this whole thing here after I put it in the update today.
It is funny when the Michaels match came up. I don't remember anything about the match, but I actually remember the promo they did to set it up, because I think it was Michaels had just won the title.
This is from Scott Bowden, by the way.
Much like Miz here, by the way.
I'll just read it. During the commentary for the Raw bout, Vince says the bout is a non-title match, despite the fact that Hebner showed the bell to the audience, and Lawler, prior to the bell, indicated it was a title shot. I believe, however, that HBK defended the title against Lawler on a house show that year. Also, earlier in 1996, champion Bret Hart defended the WWF title against Lawler in cage matches on consecutive nights in 1996 at the Municipal Auditorium in Nashville on February 16th and the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis on February 17th. Seem to recall the Memphis show had both men scrambling it over the cage. Hitman's feet barely hit the floor first, a la Hogan Orndorff from Saturday Night's Main Event, so the champ retains. So Lawler definitely had two prior WWF title matches before last night, possibly a third. Technically, though, I guess he never challenged for the WWE Entertainment title. That is, in fact, true. So there you go.
I bet the heat for those Bret Hart matches in Tennessee was awesome.
Oh, I'm sure it was outstanding.
Oh, my God. I'm jealous I didn't get to see those now.
Someone will find it, I'm sure.
So, anywho, the point of this whole promo was the main event of this show was booked Miz versus Lawler for the title in a TLC match, which was a straight out of TNA moment. And let's promote our TLC pay-per-view by giving it away for free here on Raw.
I explained this on the board. Listen, people. Think about this for a while. WWE has a TLC pay-per-view coming up. So what they did was they put a TLC match on television. It was a great match, and the fans went nuts for it. So the idea is, if you buy the show, you're going to get multiple matches like this. That is smart business. TNA has a casket match coming up. So their brilliant idea was, let's put a casket match on television. We'll have it go 2 minutes, and we'll have no fucking finish. Can no one see the difference between these two things?
I see your point.
It's completely different.
I see your point.
It's like not even in the same universe. So anyway, it's so different. It's annoyed me when I saw people make that comparison. Think, Vinny.
We had the last first round match of Sheamus versus Kofi Kingston. What happened here? Kofi hit his wild kick, but Sheamus landed under the ropes, and so there was no cover. And then later, Kofi jumped off the top rope into the bro kick and got pinned. So due to the count out between Drew McIntyre and Ezekiel Jackson, this means Sheamus got a bye into the finals. We then have the wackiest tag team of all time, Mark Henry and Yoshitatsu, versus Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater. Cena arrived. People went crazy. He had a ticket. Actually, he had like five tickets. He took a seat. Punk noted that he sat on camera side to get as much television time as possible. And thanks to the distraction, Henry pinned Slater with the World's Strongest Slam. Cena then attacked, put Slater through the announce table, and bailed before Nexus could arrive. Then, backstage, we had a horrible meeting between David Otunga, Husky Harris, and Justin Gabriel. it was one of those, let's all face the camera and then turn and look at each other. They said, there are no restrictions on Cena now that he's fired. What about the law? What about the United States legal system? This happened on, apparently, I don't know who's writing WWE these days, but between Edge kidnapping Paul Bearer and dragging him around the nation, and Cena being unpunishable because he no longer works for the company.
Listen, I am fine with the John Cena stuff because they at least tried to explain it. They tried to explain that nobody in WWE likes Nexus. Nexus beat up security. Nexus has beat up everybody. So nobody's in a hurry to have John Cena arrested. Nobody likes Nexus. Everybody likes John Cena. So there's no incentive for security to come and throw him out of the building. Security likes him significantly better than they like Nexus. So I'm fine with that. Now, the Edge-Paul Bearer stuff is complete bullshit.
Yes.
It's beyond complete bullshit. And apparently the show this week, if you read the SmackDown spoilers, is a new level of complete bullshit. And I have no idea what's going on SmackDown except pure...
It sucks.
Asshole-ish. Ish. I don't know.
You want to try that again?
Pure idiocy.
I see. Lawler was getting dressed backstage. Arn Anderson walked up, said he wanted to let him know that TLC matches were very dangerous and no one would think any less if he backed
pure
out.
Pure poppycock.
There you go. Lawler said, I know they're dangerous, but I can't let this last shot of the title pass me by. And Arn said, well, then you may as well go win. And wished him luck. We had Alberto Del Rio versus John Morrison. A few minutes in, Alberto hit his wacky kick, but then he was interrupted by car horns. Rey Mysterio was in the car honking the horn, and Morrison kicked Alberto in the face. Not as bad as Dolph Ziggler got kicked in the face by Caval, but he did kick him in the face and pinned him in one. So the finals were set for Sheamus versus Morrison.
I hate the Edge-Kane stuff as much as the worst shit on Impact. I just abhor it. It's so stupid.
Yes.
It's so ungodly stupid.
You know, I'm going to actually interrupt myself here for the we don't often talk about SmackDown on the show anymore, but I must discuss Kane's opening promo. We've been talking all year about how Kane has been having A-plus delivery with F material. The whole Undertaker feud, all the scary music promos he's cut, all the Who Took Out My Brother promos, all those, how terrible they've been.
They finally got him.
They finally found something so bad he could not make it sound believable. This is an actual sentence Kane said in the ring in the opening segment on SmackDown. He mentally tortured Paul Bearer, forcing him to play dodgeball and smothering him in pizza and buffalo wings. Direct quote.
Yeah.
Direct quote. That is what SmackDown has become.
Kane and Edge. Edge is so much better as a babyface. I'm sorry, as a heel. So much better as a heel. And Kane, and no one knows why. And when I say nobody, I mean, find me someone who knows why, whether inside or outside WWE. Kane on international tours is like mega over. He's like maybe the most popular guy in terms of ring. When he does his ring entrance, the reactions that he gets. In Mexico, he's like upper top tier. Sometimes even more so than like Rey Jr. Like, no one understands why Kane is so fucking over in all of these countries. And even at the house shows in America, when Kane's music hits, the place goes fucking nuts.
I have been to shows and marveled at the reaction Kane gets just for walking out.
So, Edge is miscast as a babyface. And Kane is miscast as a heel. You've already got that issue. And then on top of that, we're supposed to cheer Edge when he's acting like a complete asshole.
Yes.
This is like so... I don't even know. Like, you know, it's goofy enough when stuff like this happens in TNA, where Jeff comes out and you know, they lower his belt and it's supposed to be this big heel deal and everybody is chanting his name. But, you know, they're always incompetent. But... this, like, SmackDown is usually the logical show, the wrestling
show. It's the wrestling show, yes.
It has become, like, so much worse than Raw in terms of complete bullshit. Mostly this storyline here.
It's really just that.
Just, it's so dumb. Like, I can't SmackDown is a pain for me to watch these days.
Yeah, it's no good. It is completely backwards, especially the part about Edge. Edge is not being a babyface. Edge is being a heel.
He's being a complete dick.
There is one redeeming factor to the feud, and that is Paul Bearer.
I love Paul Bearer, but it's starting to get to the point where even Paul cannot save this shit.
There was, I forget what segment it was on here, but I could read my
when
notes.
He was screaming about bastards?
Bastards.
That was actually funny.
Even if they have parents, they're still bastards.
Yeah. Paul is doing all he can to salvage this shit.
I would not
shit.
Say he saved the segment, but he helped. He did what he could.
Yeah.
All right, so we're back on Raw. Wade Barrett came down to the ring, called out John Cena. Cena, he basically said that he knew Cena was trying to get him angry enough to let him back in, and that wasn't going to happen. And then suddenly Cena appeared on the big screen. Now, we talked about this. Yes, everyone likes John Cena and is nice enough, because they are friends, to let him appear on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Wade can't go to the GM and order it. There's nothing they can do to prevent John Cena from being on screen. So, he cut a promo.
I was going to make a joke, but I'm not even going to get into it here.
All right. He cut a promo basically saying that he had promised to take out everyone in Nexus, and he was going to do that job or no job. Cena dropped a Leslie Nielsen reference here, which was nice. He said security was in no rush to get rid of him. Explained that security liked him and hated Nexus. But then it turns out Nexus themselves were there in the form of Harrison, Otunga, and Gabriel. However, before they could attack, Cena pointed out that the entire Raw roster was there to beat them up. Like 15 guys jumped them, including Darren Young. He's still around. So Gabriel's head ended up going through a car window and then FU'd on the hood of the car, which also shattered the windshield. I assume these were fake. I have to assume these were fake windows. If not, then...
Well, the feeling seems to be that they were not.
That's terribly depressing.
Especially since his head went through a fucking windshield and Cena didn't even stop to see if he was okay. Just kept doing his spots.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's just... Ugh. Anyway. We had a 6-woman match. Tamina was involved. It's really the only one that matters because about a minute in, Santino came out to serenade her with an acoustic guitar singing, "I think we're alone now." That was funny. So
I hated this segment. God, I hated this.
Tamina left. The crowd was dead. CM Punk noted that Santino had taken the air out of the building. Natalya tapped out Elise with a sharpshooter. Yeah, it was not good. It was at least short. Then we got something that was longer and better. The Jerry Lawler video package. This was awesome. They had clips from Memphis, from WWF, from the AWA, clips of him becoming world champion in the AWA, which I realize, I know it's the WWE title he was contending for, but that kind of contradicted what they said about him never getting a title shot before. But
wait, no, a WWF title shot, yeah. WWE.
Yes.
That's exactly what he said, and he specified that.
That's true. Regardless, this video package was awesome. Then we had Ted DiBiase playing with a toy belt. Maryse told him not to do that because it made her look bad, and he shouted at her and left. I could have sworn they had already broken up.
No.
I guess I was mistaken. Perhaps I was thinking
tumultuous of relationship.
Goldust and Oksana. We had Harrison Otunga running around Skrrt backstage. We had Josh Matthews interviewing Morrison and Sheamus together. Sheamus acknowledged that Morrison had beat him at the pay-per-view, said it was he made a mistake and Morrison capitalized, good for him, but it wouldn't happen again. And he pointed out that Morrison had already wrestled twice, and his arm was hurt, so he said he was going to win. Morrison had a rebuttal, but I don't even remember it, so who cares? There's another 3-hour Raw in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Bullshit.
Slammies, everybody.
Yeah.
That will be much worse than King of the Ring.
Almost guaranteed. They had Miss USA there. She did a god-awful job doing the ring announcing. So we had the King of the Ring final.
You know, I was actually kind of astounded here. And Punk was kind of burying her by mentioning, "She's real pretty." As if to say that's all she's got going for her. She's real pretty. You know, there are pretty girls that are vacuous. But I haven't watched a Miss America contest in a long time. But you've got, you know, you obviously do like the statewide contest of you know, the
there
most,
is a Miss Washington pageant.
The prettiest and most talented girl in your state,
mm-hmm.
and you end up with 50 of them. And then you all those girls compete, and of the 50 girls who conceivably are the most talented and beautiful girls in each state, of those 50, you pare it down to one. Now, it's not just a beauty contest, right? Don't you have to do like a talent and you know, maybe sing or...
There's usually... I can't believe I'm actually talking about this, but there's usually like the evening gown bit where they come out and look pretty in an evening gown.
And then a swimsuit.
Swimsuit. There is a talent portion.
Yeah.
And then I believe there's also like the interview.
Yeah, they've got to do an interview.
Because that's where I think it was like Miss Teen South Carolina who just gave a classic rambling nonsensical answer one time, touching on like 8 different subjects. And it's YouTube history, but... So anyway, yes, they have done public speaking before.
So the point is, like, I mean, say what you will about Miss America, but I mean, the winner should have something. You know what I mean? She should be beautiful with charisma and some speaking ability and some talent, right?
Right.
I mean, you run statewide contests and then a nationwide contest, and this is like the cream of the crop. So I could understand how bad she was. You know what I mean? It's like, were the pickings so slim around the entire fucking country that this was the winner?
I was
astounded.
It is a beauty contest, first and foremost.
I mean, I had you know, faith in Miss America.
Well, she let you down.
She let me down.
The American dream failed you.
Really did.
So, fortunately, she just did announcing for this match and disappeared. King of the Ring finals.
Talent was not ring announcing, apparently, in this contest.
That actually would be awesome if the Miss USA talent show was going on, and one of them said, my talent is ring announcing.
Yeah.
And she just announced men. Sheamus versus John Morrison. I was disappointed they didn't have Daniel Bryan wrestle twice, wrestle 3 times, just because they'd be guaranteed 3 good matches. But this turned out, it was just a match until the last 3 or 4 minutes, and then suddenly it got awesome. And they hit all their moves, and Sheamus got his foot on the ropes at one point, and then he won with the Celtic Cross of Complete Death. So he won. All hail King Sheamus. And he went up to the top of the ramp where they had the throne and the scepter and the staff and the crown. And Miss USA was there, and she put the crown on him, and they closed in. And this was a $2 party store plastic crown. It was too light to sit down on his head, so he pushed it down, and it popped right back up. And also, one of the little things on top was bent in. This is a billion-dollar company.
Finny, where do you buy a good crown?
There's got to be a place.
Really? The crown store?
Somewhere.
The king store?
There has to be. They could have borrowed Lawler's. Oh, something.
Yeah, Lawler, I'm sure, had a professionally made crown of gold and jewels.
It could be
and
aluminum and spray painted. Somewhere.
It doesn't matter, Vinny. It's a fake crown. He ain't ever going to wear it again.
He's never wearing it again.
You really? I mean, maybe he will, but I will be just outraged if Sheamus comes out in a fucking crown next week. I realize he's King of the Ring, but come on now.
Yeah. So then we have the main event, Miz versus Jerry Lawler. They had an awesome match. I don't know what much else there is to say about it.
Hopefully not much out of you after
because
that.
Because that's going to be difficult to speak. The advantage here for having Jerry Lawler at age 60 in a TLC match is that he had two men in Miz and also Alex Riley to do all the super dangerous stuff, which as far as ladder matches go, it wasn't that dangerous.
61, he just had his birthday.
There were two table spots, and Miz took a backdrop onto a ladder that looked like it fucking sucked. But other than that, it was about as safe a TLC match as you will ever see. They hit each other in the back with chairs. They used ladders as like shots to the gut and stuff. They teased much more than they actually delivered on stuff. And it was all dramatic climbing and also Jerry Lawler punching people, which never gets old. So Miz went up top. Lawler shoved him off. Miz went through a table on the floor. Lawler had the match won and the title won when Michael Cole could take no more and hit the ring. And he grabbed Lawler's foot. Lawler was confused and appalled. He dropped Cole with a punch and then went to work on him with ground and pound. This gave Miz time to recover, and after a flurry on the top, he knocked Lawler off with the belt and pulled it down to win. This was just great. People were going crazy. Everyone wanted Lawler to win. He didn't. And just a fantastic main event here on Raw.
A fabulous battle.
Yes. This It was a fine show.
Yeah.
If I'm going to nitpick...
Don't.
You want to move on?
Seriously, I got to hear this. What do you have to nitpick about this show?
Sheamus is the king of the ring. He only had to win two matches because they did the count out
That's
in the first round.
That's the fucking point. That was the entire point. He's the heel. He got a bye to the finals that the babyface didn't get.
I see.
If this were TNA, Morrison would have got the fucking bye.
That is true.
Then you could have nitpicked.
That is true.
That's a ridiculous nitpick. That made the tournament better. Do we really need a third Miz? Vinny, it would have been Sheamus versus either Drew McIntyre or Ezekiel Jackson.
Well, those don't sound promising.
You really want to see either of those matches?
Can't see I do.
All right. Let's play a quick song here. Kali's Blue Christmas. We'll see how this bugger sounds.
Christmas without you. I'll be so just thinking about you. I want some competition. Some red on a green. One heavyweight champion won't be if you're not here with
Buddy. That was a pretty good one. That was a pretty good one right there. Suppose we should do the other stuff we've got 24/7. As mentioned at the beginning of this show, this match featured Dusty Rhodes, who's now an agent with WWE, Goldust, the Nasty Boys of Hulk Hogan's celebrity wrestling fame, Terry Funk, who's crazy, Bunkhouse Buck, who's the father of Jack Swagger, Arn Anderson, also an agent, and the Colonel Rob Parker, who I think made chicken. Not positive. But this was from Fall Brawl, September of 1994, and it was a War Games match, and it was fucking... I don't know if I can say great.
I can't say great. You can't say awesome.
It was real good in the sense that what you did, everybody, I know this sounds astounding to some of you, is War Games is double cages, two rings, and it's team versus team, and you start out with two dudes in the ring, one of the baby faces and one of the heels. Then you flip a coin to decide who goes in next. Now, for the youngsters out there, what TNA does is the coin flip almost always. They actually have figured it out after the last year, maybe 2 years. But in the first several years, the coin flip was won by the babyfaces. So the babyfaces ran in, and it was 2-on-1 advantage babyfaces. This is an epic fail.
This shows a complete understanding of what makes pro wrestling fun.
A complete lack of understanding of what makes pro wrestling
fun.
Excuse
me, yes.
So, the way that you do it, and listen carefully, because this is very complex psychology here that I'm about to explain. What you do is the coin flip is won by the bad guys. So, a heel gets in the ring. And so there's two heels beating on one babyface. And the fans, you see, get outraged at this injustice. And they cheer for the babyface to not give up and to fight back. Then the next guy in is a babyface. He runs wild. It is now a fair fight. The people go fucking insane with joy, because the baby faces are finally getting their just desserts. And then, of course, the next guy in is a heel, so there's another unfair advantage. And you keep doing this until every fucking guy is in the ring. The last of which, obviously, is the biggest star, the biggest star babyface making the biggest fucking comeback. At that point, you can have a finish. And in this case, the finish was Colonel Rob Parker, the manager, got put in a figure four leg lock by Dusty Rhodes, and then the Nasty Boys took turns repeatedly dropping elbows on him as he was completely helpless until he finally said uncle. And the fans all went crazy. They were so happy. It's fucking great. So anyway, that's all this match was.
It's really, yeah.
There were not great workers in this match.
Oh, no.
I mean,
let's make this clear.
Terry Funk is great. But Terry Funk in this match may have been drunk. I don't know. He did a lot of stumbling around. At one point, he fell through the crack between the two rings and was trapped and had to fight his way out. Much like Gracie the other day jumped behind the washing machine and was stuck and had to figure out a way to leap free. It's exactly what happened with Terry Funk here. We had dudes get their head stuck, supposedly, in the crack between the rings and pile-driven there. Even though their head was hitting nothing but air, they still sold it on top of their head. I mean, this was not great action here. But it was a well-done War Games match psychologically. And there was even the spot where Ming, who was a manager in this particular match, he was so angry at what was going on to his team that he tried to enter the cage, but you see, he couldn't get fucking in because it's in a goddamn cage with a fucking roof on it.
Yes.
Jesus, is this that hard to figure out?
Actually, so, that's the key. It's not.
It's
the simpler
not.
You do War Games, the better it will be.
Why do people try to make this hard and like get on people that point out how easy this stuff is?
I don't know.
What is it? What is it that makes you want to do things wrong? I don't have that feeling in my life. I don't sit here and go, how can I run my business wrong? How can I attempt to lose money? I don't have those thoughts. I don't wake up and go, how am I going to lose money today? How am I going to do something really dumb this afternoon? Let me think about this for a while. Yet there's apparently a segment of the population, including the people that write TNA, where they must think that. I mean, they have to think that when they get up this morning. I mean, it's just there's no other explanation for this rampant stupidity.
It really is a very simple idea. You have, at the beginning, the good guy beats up the bad guy for 5 minutes. Then the other bad guy comes in. They win on him for 2 minutes, setting up the big save. And you just repeat it. And then the other key is that makes it all simple is every time a new guy enters the cage, and not before then, but every time a new guy enters the cage, the momentum shifts. So that you have swings of momentum. You have the good guys fall behind and they need help. And then here is a savior over and over again. And then, oh no. Here is a new bad guy to turn the tide. It is just a series of run-ins and saves, and then you do the big finish. And it was, there was a lot of bad action here. Jerry Sags.
No shit.
Jerry Sags was the second babyface in. He had to come in and save Dustin from Arn Anderson and I believe Buck.
Jerry Sags was horrible.
Oh my God. Just throwing these. He threw his arms around and waddled around the ring. That's all I can really say. But people got into it. And then when the third heel came in and cut him off, suddenly it was not fair. And people wanted to see him saved. And so in came Brian Knobbs. You never seen people so happy to see Brian Knobbs before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the lesson here is if you do War Games right, even if you don't do it very well, it will still be good.
Yeah. It's idiot-proofed unless you're an idiot.
Unless you're an idiot and you don't know you're an idiot. If you're an idiot who thinks you're smart, you can screw it up.
Last week when I discovered that Vince Russo didn't like to read, I was shocked. And in hindsight, I have no idea why I was shocked. No shit, he doesn't read books. You know what I mean? How is that shocking at all? He's clearly never read a story.
Yeah? Are you still over there?
I'm gobsmacked. My jaw is hanging open. Don't you get read Bible stories when you're little? Especially Vince fucking Russo.
Yes.
Vince Russo is a religious man. Have you never read the Bible?
Of course he hasn't.
The oldest fucking stories.
Most.
Not the oldest fucking stories, but pretty goddamn old.
They're very old.
But holy Lord in heaven. I mean, there are no swerves in the Bible.
Yeah, it would not be nearly as good if, say, at the last second, Christ jumped down from the cross and ran away, or before he was nailed. Yeah, that really would defeat the purpose.
It's not like I don't know. Maybe he sees swerves and all sorts of things. You know? I don't know. Let's play a song.
Do we want to talk about the Hogan match?
Hogan match?
Did you watch Terry Funk wrestle Hulk Hogan?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, as well.
This is from...
It was fine. I was not blown away by
Honestly, yes. It was a very run-of-the-mill Hulk Hogan match.
It was like a house show match with Terry Funk and Hulk Hogan a couple of years after Funk retired and returned again.
The most notable thing was Hulk Hogan wearing teal trunks.
Yeah.
Looked awful.
You know, I will say one thing about the Hogan match, though. And I can hear people typing in vitriol as I say this, but people chanted Hulk Hogan's name, and it was like a bunch of women and children, and it sounded remarkably like the reactions that John Cena gets nowadays.
Mm.
Didn't it, though?
I didn't notice.
It sounded like the exact same fucking people chanting for Hulk Hogan that chant for John Cena nowadays.
He was very popular with youngsters.
It was kind of creepy, actually. So, you know, maybe one of these days John Cena will be Hulk Hogan.
And also, let it be known that in 1985, which is the earliest I think I've heard this, that's when they started calling Terry Funk middle-aged and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
His middle-aged craziness lasted at least another decade.
And as mediocre as the match was, the finish pissed me off. Pardon me.
The
for
finish was god-awful.
Yeah, Funk, I guess Hogan got a boot that Funk, I guess, was trying to use. Funk liked to hit people with boots, I noticed tonight, because he did in War Games, too. But Hogan took the boot, and he hit Terry Funk right in front of the fucking referee. Like, the referee was staring straight at him. And the referee did not disqualify him, and in fact, he immediately counted the pin.
Yeah.
Which caused Jesse Ventura to just be outraged. I believe, you're completely right, Jesse Ventura.
It wasn't even outrageous.
This is an outrage.
It wasn't even outrage as much as it was just disgust, how stupid the whole thing was.
I'd like to see Jesse Ventura on Conspiracy Theory talk about this match. Yeah. You ever watch that show?
I think I watched it one time. I just remember he... Jesse vowed to get to the bottom of something, and as he walked away, the person who was helping watched him walk away and then said, "We need you, Governor."
Let me say this about the conspiracy theory. I've been watching some shows like this because I'm a big fan, and someday I will do my own Coast to Coast show here on this website, but I was watching Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, and I also watched Ancient Aliens, which I believe is on the History Channel, and I was really excited for Ancient Aliens, and I really didn't like it. I found it to be wacky, like too wacky even for me. And the people that they interviewed were like complete goofballs, and it just wasn't my thing. But Conspiracy Theory, there is a lot of stupid shit on that show. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Jesse has a think tank, you know, it's consisting of like the skeptic and then the girl who believes everything, and then Jesse, who is always looking stern, and then there's, like, Jesse's, I don't know what they call him, like, Jesse's manager or Jesse's producer or something like that, but they all sit around a table, and they have these ridiculously scripted conversations that set up their investigation, and they're just so stupid. But with that said, I actually kind of like Conspiracy Theory, because Jesse does sort of see a conspiracy in everything, but he's also like, there's something about Jesse where you kind of know that he really doesn't believe all the bullshit. You know what I mean?
He's winking at you the entire time.
Kind of. I kind of get that feeling. Whereas with Ancient Aliens, I think these people are like fully believing all of their bullshit, even stuff that's like completely, clearly bullshit. Anyway, that's kind of the impression that I got. I actually have been enjoying Conspiracy Theory. I want to watch all of them now. But Ancient Aliens, I gave up after 1.5. I was just like, this is just too outlandish for me. This is ridiculous. And I'm a fan of that sort of goofiness. But it was just too goofy for me. All right, let's play this song. And then we've got a metric ass load, I would go as far as to say.
I was not aware the metric system had ass loads.
Yeah, shout outs. We'll get to those in a second. Let's play this song. Tonight, I hate everything about the winter, including chestnuts, fire, Christmas in general. I hate the snow. I curse it. Colder than a motherfucker. I hate the winter. The snow can fuck off.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go,
fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low.
Fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow. Yeah, actually,
Noah's Ark is shut down.
He did two of these. He says he liked this one better, so I apologize for playing the bad one. Let's play one more, the good one. Tonight, I hate everything about the winter, including chestnuts, fire, Christmas in general. I hate the snow.
Apparently,
I curse
a better fuck
it. Colder than a motherfucker. I hate the winter. The snow can fuck off.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go,
fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Man, yes. It doesn't
that's
show
better.
Signs of
that
stopping.
A little better.
And I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low.
Fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Fuck the snow.
Speaking of
Noah's
popcorn,
Ark is shut down.
They like the wheezing Vinny laugh there at the end.
Is that me?
Speaking of popcorn, we'll discuss our movie night perhaps on another day, but I would like to mention that Whitney was down in Oregon this weekend, and when she came back home, one of her first questions was somebody eating popcorn? And I said, Vinny. And she said, oh, because there's a giant puddle of butter at the bottom of the microwave.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
A puddle. A puddle of butter. I was like, you were gone and a bunch of dudes were over here, so.
What do you expect?
Could have been much worse.
You had some popcorn too. But I put the popcorn in, I hit the popcorn button on your microwave, and it actually, well, I don't know if this would help the butter issue, but it came out very underdone. It was like 20% unpopped. So, the disaster all around.
This is from Paul. After reaching the 1-year anniversary of joining your tremendous empire, I thought now would be as good a time as any to cash in my free shout-out. And by the way, everybody, if you do sign up, you get a free shout-out. You can talk about whatever you want. We would prefer a 150-word limit, or we may edit it here on the air. But sign up today, and then send in your shout-out. And on the next free show, we'll read it. So to celebrate this fine day, I have also just finished listening to every Brian and Vinny show recorded before I joined in November of 2009. That's right. Every show we've ever done on this website is available in our archives.
Why would you do such a thing?
Dating back to 2005.
There's a lot of bad shows in that group.
In a year, I have experienced the first appearance of Brent, the Bass Ban of 2006. Remember that, Vinny?
Oh, I do.
The Super Chico Sports Quiz, the debut of Iron Sheik, Satchel Ass, the Hall of Fame Freakout, the Zombie, the Battle.
Zombie.
Count Marquis Von Kor, the Monster Mash Battle Royal, and the Barbed Wire Christmas Tree. Also, the VDV Sports Report and Granny's Roof. I'll culminate with my first Brian and Vinny memory, the Hulk Hogan book signing at Third Place Books. That was a great show, if I do say so myself. Here's to the continued success of the F4W Empire and all of its fine members. That's from Paul in Newcastle, England. Thank you very much, Paul.
Hell of a shout-out.
Very much appreciate that one. All right. This person here is Richard. Brian, I work two jobs in data entry. I do too, actually. I have been a wrestling fan since I was 13. I am now 42. I decided to listen to your website this time last year, and I love it. It is the best monthly subscription money can buy, from the hard-hitting interviews to the sheer comedy of the Drunken Christmas Show, which, by the way, is a couple of weeks away, everyone. The annual Christmas show. If you're new, you might want to go into the archives and listen to some future or some past Christmas shows.
Or you might not.
You may not.
They're not for everyone.
They're not for everyone, but they're coming up in a couple of weeks. So, cheap plug here. If you want to send gifts,
yes,
that we're going to open up here on the air, you need to start sending them quickly. Post office box 426 Woodinville, Washington at 98072. That's P.O. Box 426, Woodinville, Washington 98072. We open all presents that we receive on the air on the Christmas show. So that is the address if you want to send us a little something-something. He also says, yes, Dirty Dick Slater, not the redneck, but the Afro-American version from Baltimore, Maryland. That's right. This is from Richard Slater.
Oh.
A legit Dirty Dick.
Huh. How about that?
Thanks very much there, Richard. Glad you're enjoying the shows, and we've got a new Christmas show for you coming up in a couple of weeks now, so you can look forward to that. Paul! Couple of comments for y'all.
The Apostle Paul?
Firstly, last week when Granny told you about her new Scottish friend, and you both laughed when you heard his name was something Henderson, what sort of names do you think we all have here? My name is Paul Chalmers.
Apparently, I've been told Henderson is actually a very common Scottish name.
Does it annoy either of you that Matt Hughes bills himself as a 9-time UFC champion? Although I understand why he does. It still really grinds my gears.
I actually...
Should it be grinds me gears?
That may be Irish. I'm not sure.
Not sure what that was, actually. But really grinds me gears.
At the job where I once had to go through the bass ban, there was an outdoor show that it may have been Hughes, but there was a UFC champion who was doing an appearance there. And they referenced him as like a 14-time champion or something. And I thought, no, that's absurd. And so I fixed it to 1- or 2-time champion, whichever it was. Then I realized they were counting like every title fight he ever had.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That is cheating.
No, that's how it works, though. He says, if either of you, or any listeners for that matter, are old school ladies Transformers cartoon or comic fans, would you say that David Otunga is in the Starscream spot?
Fuck no. Starscream was great.
Wow.
Starscream was a fantastic character.
All right, before Vinny completely geeks out, let me move on.
David Otunga sucks.
In all seriousness, would TNA sign Hornswoggle if they had the chance and put him on TV? What do you think? They may try.
Yes, immediately.
If he wouldn't ask for much. Anyway, I'll take this as my shout-out. Brian, Vinny, awesome show. Paul Chim from Glasgow, Scotland. Thank you very much there, Paul. Let's see what we've got next. This here is from Brad. Just wanted to say that I really enjoy the site. Wanted to give a shout-out to Dixie Carter for throwing away $40 million in 1 year to have your power to do so invoked. Bravo! P.S. When is the ideal American coming to PWA? When he gets his passport, which may not be anytime soon. I don't think Dixie threw away $40 million in 1 year, but she's thrown away $40 million in several years.
I don't think she legitimately lost her power.
Yeah. It's from Levi. Recently signed up to the site. Just wanted to use my shout-out. Getting used to the board. Not the most intelligent people in there, but all is fine so far. Just also wanted to say thanks for reviewing Impact for me, because now I don't need to look at that shit and waste 2 hours of my life. Appreciate the work, guys. Oh, and thanks for getting my name right on previous shows. You'd be surprised at the amount of people that get it wrong. Really? What do they call you, Levy? How do you screw up Levi McKinney? You'd have to be a fool.
You have to not be familiar with pants or the Bible.
This is from Lee Harvey. Hopefully not... Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, yeah.
Signed up earlier this month. And how ironic he sent this on November 22nd, by the way.
Is that when Lee Harvey Oswald died?
That's when Kennedy was murdered, you jackass.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Signed up earlier this month after a long period of freeloading and thought I'd cash in my free shout-out. While I remembered, I'll keep it short and sweet. Just like to take the opportunity to praise the fantastic Brian and Vinny show, which has given me many laughs on a tube journey, and urge every freeloader listening to sign up for what worked out to £7 a month. That's money.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I've already gone back and downloaded every Brian and Vinny Christmas show from the quite unreal archive. Oh, it is unreal.
It is very unreal.
Don't get me wrong. Shoutouts go to West Ham United Football Club, Wade Barrett, Panda Powered, Bird Z, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk for his glorious commentary, William Regal, Abe Tumnus, and F... Did I screw that one up?
I don't know. It just sounded funny.
Oh, Abu Tumnus.
Abe is funnier. Abe Tumnus.
The F365 gang and Scott Parker. Many thanks. Keep up the good work. Lee from London, England, a.k.a. Harvey Shammers. That does not sound like the right name.
Harvey Shammers sounds like a powerful cocktail.
It sounds like vigorous fucking.
I Harvey Shammered her.
It's from Dan.
Sorry.
Oh, Dan is actually going to send in a limerick because Granny did not read it. So he's going to send it in later. So that's the update there. All right. Alan has a offspring-related shout-out. You do get a free shout-out if you actually procreate, which when we first started this website, we thought no one here would actually ever do that. But instead, perhaps thousands have. So Alan here says, I'm rarely on the board, but I thought I'd make a donation to the site because you fucking rule, and get a shout-out for my recently arrived son, Dante David Thor Lord.
Lord?
Yeah.
Dante David Thor Lord. Wow.
That's right.
That kid has a burden to live up to.
DDT Lord.
God.
He'll either love me or hate me when he's older. I must give kudos to my wife, Sarah, for being a good sport in agreeing to the name thing. I'll say.
Dante. Okay, wait a minute.
I don't know if a good sport is a term I would use for this lovely woman. Even though
I'll try to decide. Go ahead.
Not only did she go along with this, but apparently she hates wrestling with a passion.
Also, do we.
That's love right there, motherfuckers. I'll say. I just want to say that freeloaders are missing out big time on all the quality content y'all provide. I hope that many of these folks will wise up in 2011 and sign the fuck up. Keep up the terrific work, everyone, Vinny included. That's from Al.
I'm actually trying to decide what is the geekiest portion of that name. Dante, Thor, or DDT?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, I didn't even realize the DDT thing until you pointed it out. But I knew Dante and Thor were geeky in and of themselves.
Hmm.
No opinion?
No, not really.
All right.
All right. This is from David. Hello, gentlemen. I've been a member of the site and unfortunately the board since May, so I thought I'd cash in my shout-out before I forget. Shout-outs to the great Cotrere for his best of B&V recaps and TNA Adrenaline Flush. 420 Chan's Woo Board, not just for the connoisseurs of illicit substances, and VinceVerhey.info, the internet's number one resource for primetime Deion Sanders facts.
Yeah.
And a shout-out to the great Cotrere for his best of B&V recaps and TNA Adrenaline Flush.
I think it's a poorly written shout-out.
I have read that line four times now. Tribute to Twisted Metal 2, the greatest video game ever, apparently. He's still talking about your website. VinceFairhigh.info.
It is a great game. That I will stand by.
Fuck off to everybody ever associated with Total Nonstop Action Wrestling, including the wrestlers. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And it's one way to look at it. Keep up the good work with the website. If you call yourself a true fan of pro wrestling, you'll purchase a subscription, or else you're a dirty, no-good communist! And nobody likes them, do they? That's from David. Never really thought about it, David, whether people like communists here in 2011 almost, but my guess would be most people probably do not. I don't know. All right, everybody, that's it for today.
Sweet.
What a great show that was we just did tonight, if I do say so myself.
Was this better than the Limerick show?
I'm not quite sure. You know, I mentioned one last story here, since we were talking about illicit substances. So we live in Seattle, and it's a depressing place, and people kill themselves often.
And others.
And there's many people affected in this area with seasonal affective disorder. Look it up. SAD. 20% of the population, they say, of the Northwest suffers from seasonal affective disorder. And sometimes you can just kind of be in a frump because the weather's so goddamn cloudy all the time.
And it's dark all the time.
Rains and it snows. So I decided I was going to look into one of those lights. They have, if you investigate seasonal affective disorder, they have, you can go buy a really bright light. And they say that if you sit in the front of the light for like 20 minutes a day, you just feel so much better, like it's summertime. So I decided I was going to investigate one of these. And there's a place in Seattle that sells them. And I thought, I'll drive down there and take a look. Anyway, long story short, I was expecting, like, you know, a place that focused on lights for seasonal affective disorder, something like that.
It was Lamps Plus.
No, it wasn't Lamps Plus, but I'll just say that when I went inside, it reeked of marijuana.
So perhaps the lights were multi-purpose.
Suffice to say, the lights were in fact multi-purpose. So, any of you that are really feeling sad this holiday season,
that's true,
might want to do some investigation in Seattle, because, I don't know, you might come out of that place feeling great without even making a purchase. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap this up today. We'll be back tomorrow. Todd Martin and I doing a show, Dave Meltzer and I later on. And, of course, on Thursday, going to be back as well with Lance Storm and a new Brian and Vinny show. Lots of stuff coming up. Check it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Good night.